In this episode, we are exploring the difference between a high achiever and an impact leader. My guest today, Chris Robinson, is the Executive Vice President of Maxwell Leadership and author of From Drift to Drive. He leads the global expansion of the Maxwell Leadership Certified Team, community of coaches, speakers, and trained developed by Dr. John C. Maxwell. With over two decades of experience, Chris specializes in equipping leaders across industries with the skills and mindset for meaningful impact. Together, we discuss what it means to be a high-impact leader today, and you will learn about his 7-step framework for progressing from complacency to high impact. Welcome to the Online Business by Design podcast. I'm your host, Ivana Ivanek, and this is your mindset and marketing podcast to help you build a business next to your 9-to-5 without burning out. And most importantly, enjoying your business journey while you're making money and impact. Grab your favorite note-taking device, lean back, and get inspired. I believe that everything you need to build a business of your dreams is already within you. Welcome back, friends, to another episode of the Online Business by Design podcast. It's your host, Ivana Ivanek. I'm so incredibly thankful for you that you are listening today. I always like to mention that I'm thankful for having the opportunity today to meet incredible experts across oceans. Thank you so much, Innovation. And I want to say that I am not taking you for granted. Your trust, your commitment to growth and to making this world a better place. Chris, welcome to the show. It's such a privilege to have you here today.
Oh my goodness. So excited to be on here with you today, Ivana. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to help you add value to people.
It's a pleasure. I always like to say, no one has made it ever alone. And I truly believe that we can only learn from the people that have been walking the path we want to walk. And even those that are slightly above, when we have the thought like, oh my God, should I even reach out to this person? Am I even enough to have a conversation with someone who is highly successful? But I truly believe that these are the places we should be going that will lead us to quicker success. Now, I have plenty of questions prepared for you today. We're going to speak about your brand new book. We're going to speak about some really good thoughts that I haven't had on the show yet. But first, please tell us a little bit who you are and how you became the leader you are today, how you got to Maxwell Leadership, how you became a speaker, because you said you didn't come from privilege.
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, my journey in leadership began really about, gosh, I guess 25 years ago. It was in early 2001 that I was a salesperson at a company, and I just had this desire to grow. Let me be honest, Ivana. I didn't want to grow for the sake of growing. I had this very shallow target. I wanted to make more money, and I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be the boss, okay? Mm-hmm. That was the aspiration. But on that aspiration, there was a turning point as I began to take a course from John Maxwell on the 21 Laws of Leadership. Now, I say take a course from John Maxwell. I was actually watching it on VHS, TV in the basement of a church. Okay. So I was learning from John from a distance. But what happened was I was learning these brand new thoughts and philosophies on leadership and how to add value to people. And it really shifted the way that I began to pursue getting promoted on the job. You know, one of the things that really stood out to me very early on was he taught in this first chapter of the book, The Law of the Lid, and it says that your organization cannot go beyond the leader's capabilities. But what really stood out in that chapter that shifted everything for me was he showed one graph of, you know, if you just really worked on your skill set and you became successful. And it showed a little graph that showed from scale of 0 to 10, and then it showed that you got to about an 8, which is about where we like to get to, where we feel like we really got it down. But then it showed if you add leadership ability to it and you increase your leadership effectiveness, your overall effectiveness grows substantially. So I went on this mission to grow as a leader. And then what I realized was that instead of me trying to be the star and being really good at my job, what if I became a star creator? And what if I began to really focus on getting people promoted on the job, getting people to the level that I was going to, getting people to go beyond where I was going to? How much more valuable would I be to the organization? Just being the one person that's good at the job? Or what if I can create 10, 20, 30 people that are as effective as me or more effective than me? How valuable would I be? And that shift helped me get promoted on the job several times. And so in my early 20s, I did very well financially because I was helping other people. So that shift really made the difference. Now, I would love to say, yes, that shift, I made great money, and then I just ascended to leadership, to leading the largest leadership coaching and training company on the planet. That's not the case. In my late 20s, I thought that I had that golden touch, and I was going to go out and start my own company. Well, that first company failed. The second company failed. And then I found myself, Ivana, crying in a car,
You're
just tears.
making, Chris, you are making me feel good about myself.
Good. But Ivana, I was crying. Let me tell you, it was an ugly cry. I'm crying in the car. And then, in this moment, I realized that, you know what? I wasn't built to form and take on a normal job. I was built to add value to people. I was built to be an entrepreneur. And so I pursued coaching, speaking, and training. And I started out on my own, just trying to figure it out. I did exactly what you talked about in the opening of finding someone that's further ahead of you. I called every single speaker that I could find in the St. Louis area and said, "Hey, my name is Chris Robinson. I'm looking to find out more about professional speaking. I'd love to be a volunteer at any of your events." Now, watch this, Yvonne. I didn't call them and say, "Hey, can I pick your brain? Can I take from you?" I said, "Hey, how can I serve you?" Now, no one called me back. Now, I was a little bit disappointed.
No one needed help.
No one needed help. No one needed help. Or at least they just didn't call me back. They didn't like my voice. They didn't like something. Who knows? But finally, a couple days later, a lady calls me back and she says, "Chris, thank you so much for calling. That was so kind of you. I don't have anything right now, but if something comes up, I'll let you know." Well, I was excited because now I at least talked to a professional speaker, and that was great. My efforts paid off. A couple days later, she calls back and she is in a panic. She says, "Chris, I had a cameraman scheduled to come film me at this event. I don't have a cameraman. Would you be my cameraman?" I said, "Indeed." Now, look, Ivana, I did not know anything about working a camera at all. But what I knew was that this was my opportunity to get in the room and get around proximity of someone that was doing what I wanted to do. Now, proximity is powerful because proximity allows you to see things that you can't see in a book, that you can't see from someone teaching on stage. Proximity is powerful because some things are taught, but then some things are caught. Some things are taught, but some things are caught. And when you're in proximity, you get to catch those things that you would not catch from a book or from a formal meeting. And so I go inside this room and I'm filming her. And I've got to be the worst videographer on the planet. I'm jerking that thing from back and forth, but I'm happy as can be. And then at the end of that first session, we get to sit down for lunch. And Ivana, she says to me, "Chris, thank you so much for serving me. I know that you want to find out about professional speaking. Do you have any questions?" I said, "Indeed, I do." I had a list of 20 questions lined up, ready to go. Now, I was prepared for the opportunity, but I didn't push for the opportunity. And so, because I was timely, I was prepared, I had questions, she was so excited. And then our time was up. I respected the mentor's time, and I went back to filming. I did so well that day. Because she didn't see the footage yet. She said, "Hey, Chris, would you like to come back and serve me again tomorrow?" And I said, "Yes." I came back, I filmed again, I got to ask questions. And at the end of the lunch this time, she says, "Chris, I don't know why I want to do this, but would you like to speak on stage today?" I said, "Yeah, I'd love to speak on stage today." She says, "I want to give you 5 minutes and I want you to speak about one of the slides I spoke about yesterday. Are you up for the challenge?" I said, "Indeed, I am." I went up there and I spoke, and her smile was from ear to ear. And that lady became an incredible mentor in my life from a speaking capacity. Now, a couple years later is when John Maxwell actually offered certification for the very first time. Now, when John Maxwell offered certification for the first time, I was still trying to dig my way out of the struggle. And so I didn't have the money to pay in full, fly to Florida, do all these different things, but I knew that I could either make a way or I can make an excuse. And I knew that I wanted to get in the room again for proximity with John Maxwell, and I got inside that room. And so I took the tools and resources that the team offered, and I built a business, speaking, coaching, and training, adding value to people. And over the years, I continued to come back to every single conference that John would have, and I would serve at these events. And, you know, eventually John began to know my name. He began to hear about the results and the impact that I was making. In 2016, they asked me to be one of the teaching faculty members. And then in 2020, I actually took over as vice president of the company. You know, so it was a long way from pressing play on a VHS player in 2001 to leading the largest coaching, speaking, training program on the planet.
Beautiful. What a journey, Chris. I would like to touch on a couple of points you said.
Yeah.
My first question is, early in your introduction, you mentioned that I realized that I am not meant to stay on this job. I am an entrepreneur. I think everybody listening to this show has that feeling, has had it, or is about to trust it. And this is one of the, for me, it was one of the scariest feelings I ever experienced when I realized that it was in my teens. I was 16, 17, when I realized, what am I even doing? Like, I was a person that always enjoyed education, but never the educational path. I was literally standing there or sitting, staring at the out of the window, questioning why I needed to know everything about the amoeba virus and how it spreads in a human body. But nobody could explain to me how Beyonce formed Destiny's Child being only 9 years old. Like, I wanted to know all this cool stuff that people are doing, right? I didn't want to become a doctor. Not saying that doctors are not cool.
Right.
I'm grateful for having everyone serving humanity. But I didn't want to do any of this. However, I ended up doing it. But then when this calling came of, okay, I need to change something, I don't see the point of getting up 7 a.m. in the morning, going to this company and doing whatever I was doing. I had great jobs, great companies, great people, great mentors, but it just wasn't it.
Right.
And you say that a lot of people are trapped and are not making impact as leaders because they're missing a clear path. Can you take us back a little bit and say, like, how did you go about this? Because just quitting a job and starting something that fails two times in your case is risky, scary. It takes energy from us. So how did you know that this is my path, and how did you gain that clarity?
Yeah, great question. And a lot of, you know, and people, like you said, are struggling with, you know, hey, I know that I'm supposed to be an entrepreneur. Now, not everybody's supposed to be an entrepreneur, because you got to have a little bit of a screw loose like us, Ivana, to go, you know what, I don't need to do all this other traditional stuff. I just want to go this route. And so entrepreneurship really is a bipolar roller coaster. I mean, some days I'm going, yes, I'm doing it. I'm living my dream. And some days I'm looking in the mirror going, what am I doing with my life? You know, come on, Ivana, look like you've been there before.
I'm in this every single day.
Right.
Wake up and you'll be like, what am I doing here?
Right.
Why am I doing this? But then you need to remind yourself why you're doing this. And it's just that one message I want to bring across to the world and be in service of humanity. And I think this is the guidance. But in between, there is a lot of questioning yourself, questioning the world and everything around you.
Yeah. Well, and so that's why it's so important to really first, you have to clarify the vision of what it is that you want to do. So inside the book, I teach a 7-step framework that really helps you through that cycle of entrepreneurship. It helps you towards that cycle of moving towards, you know, what you believe that you're good at, but you know that you have more potential, and I help you close that gap. So the 7-step framework looks like this, and this can help a lot of people go from where they are to where they want to go. You know, the first step that I teach in the framework is clarity. You cannot have what you cannot see. You have to be clear on where it is that you want to go. And so many times when we drift in our life, it's because it's foggy. It's unclear. We're not really sure what it is that we want to do. We can't see the next step, or I don't know what to do. And so we have to get a well-defined vision of what it is that we want to do. Now, I don't want to complicate it for you. It really looks like this. I'm going to write out a real simple thing. All right. If you can answer this one question, this will help you get clear. One question. What do I want? Okay.
Ooh, it's the simplest and yet hardest question to answer for people.
Right. But when we answer that question, if there's only two, three, four, five things on here, well, then now everything else clears out, all the clutter. And then now we can begin to say, hey, you know what? This is what I want. And then now we can begin to shift all of our effort, our focus into that specific thing, going after that thing. But the second thing that we have to do, if we want to grow, is we have to get knowledge in the specific area that we want to go. So the second step is gathering, and that is gathering of information and resources in order to help you get to where you want to go. So we gather that through books, through videos, through audios, through courses, through conferences. We gather the information that way. But a lot of people love to gather. They got a lot of shelf help. They got a lot of
Forever.
shelf help. They got all the stuff, but they're not doing the next step, which is truly critical, and that's filtering the information. All right? Filtering the information is so important. Now, and in this, I teach what's called layered learning. All right? So have you ever done this, Ivana? You're reading a book on one topic. You're watching a video on another topic. You're listening to an audio on another topic. You're taking a course on another topic, and you're going to a conference about another topic and wondering, why in the world do I feel overwhelmed and stressed out right now? Why aren't things going? But what happens is, if you line up those things, the books, the videos, the audios, even the small clips, tell YouTube what you want to see, tell Facebook what you want to see, because then now when you line everything up, now you begin to get movement. But then the fourth step is what you talked about in the very beginning. It's guidance. It's getting a mentor, a coach, someone that's further ahead of you, even if it's a little bit further ahead of you, to help you move in the direction that you want to go, and leveraging the wisdom from mentors and trusted voices. I'm here today doing what I get to do today because I sought out mentors in the areas that I want to go. There's two ways to get mentors in your life. It's seek to serve, like I did in the first scenario, or pay to play. You pay a coach. Invest in yourself to get a coach. Invest in yourself to work with Ivana. Invest in yourself, whatever area of that you want to grow in, pay a coach to help guide you. I did that with pickleball. I mean, my goodness. I played pickleball for the first time. I said, oh, I love this game. 2 days later, I had a coach that I was working with, and I was able to progress and get good at it. I sought out guidance. And so it works in every area. The fifth step is relationships, because now you begin to fortify yourself, they use the term Peloton, in the Tour de France. And the Peloton is a group of riders all riding in formation, going in the same direction. And if you can find your Peloton, your group of people that are moving in that direction, oh my goodness, it lights fire to the guidance that you're getting, the information that you've gathered, the vision that you have clarity on. But then the sixth step, you got to take action, right? There's nothing that's going to happen if you don't take action. And so it's you doing the things that you're learning, not learning more information, not seeking more information, but taking action on it. And then number seven is evaluating your progress. And that's taking an honest reflection and self-assessment to stay aligned, to stay focused, to stay, for the fuel to move forward. And that shoots you right back into that loop of clarity again, because now this time around, your vision's a lot more sharper, a lot more clear, because you've gone through those seven steps, and you do it again and again and again. You do that, you move towards your goals, your dreams, your vision faster.
I totally agree. I want to just tap on one point you mentioned is mentorship. If I think back of my story of failure, young 20s, naive not enough to try, but not having a clear path maybe, but never dared to specify, then I did definitely I was, what was the second part? It was clarity. The second was gathering
Gathering, yeah.
information. I definitely gathered information. I was an expert in my field, just freshly with my diploma, and I had a really, really big dedication and passion for health and movement, so mindset and health coaching. Then I realized one thing that I was missing: sitting in the corner alone, because we didn't have entrepreneurs in my family. I was told that these things are not for me. Like, living by the ocean, traveling the globe, doing something to help people, having a job that nobody could relate at its time to
Right,
it, nor could really I. I was just looking around what's possible and said, let's go
Right.
try. And not even considering that there are other people sitting in their corner, just lonely as I was.
Right.
May it be my peers that I did not talk to because I was fearing competition. And then also asking someone who has walked that path already or who has been successful was incredibly daunting. Like, what are they gonna think of me? Like, this little girl trying her way up. But what has changed drastically in my life is when I was seeking mentorship, there was not only clarity, there was accountability. I suddenly could see things that I haven't seen before. And I think it's so critical to have a bigger vision then. And I can guarantee you that your third grade cousin or your friend from school you haven't talked to in 10 years won't be sharing this vision with you. Because if you really speak to leaders, to thought leaders on the market, like now I have this conversation with you, or you to reach out to anybody else, you will see that what we often so believe, like, I'm dreaming about this, but that's too far-fetched. That suddenly that too far-fetched can become your reality and you will not even notice, and you are right in the midst of it. And I think you did it extremely cool to go like, you know what, I'm gonna help you. Let me help you. This is what people often refer to when they wanna, if someone starts growing in the corporate world, let's say like, yeah, first you're gonna clean those toilets. First you're gonna be the cleaner. First you're gonna learn about the every single department that exists, and then you might get an invitation. So now what I also see, Chris, is when we speak about thought leadership, and I think for me, an expert and a thought leader are two different things. I think we are all experts in our field because we have intellectual property, we have education, we've been either to university, have diplomas, we have knowledge, wisdom, and life expertise that we can bring to the table. But thought leadership goes a step further. This is where you start taking responsibility, in my opinion, for the work you put out there, for every single word you say publicly, for every guidance you take on to not only start it, but finish it. Why are we so trapped in taking that step? Or you explained it from going from 8 to 10, because I think
Right.
today to succeed in business, it's not just being good enough. I think you said good enough is no longer good enough.
Right.
What are
Yeah.
the external, internal traps that you
Right.
are experiencing across your field and work you do with people?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't make that shift to trying to be the star to a star creator, primarily because of insecurity. Thinking, well, if I train this person and they get promoted, what about me? Or, hey, I don't want to do this extra work on the job because if I don't get the promotion, all I got was extra work. But one of the number one questions I would ask my manager as I was trying to scale that ladder was, hey, what is it that you don't like to do that I could do for you? What is it that you don't like to do that I could do for you? Now, that's a dangerous question because all that meant was additional free work for me. But it wasn't dangerous because what happened was by time the promotions came around, I was already doing jobs that management didn't want to do. And so I became the next logical choice. And so had I had the fear of doing something and not getting recognized for it, that was the risk I was taking, but I was gaining experience that nobody else was getting simply because they didn't want to take that risk. So the first thing I think is, we're scared of risk. We're scared of, insecure that somebody else is going to get it. Hey, if somebody else gets it, great. Find out why you didn't get it and then go back and, continue to do more work. And I think another reason is that, we put ourselves first. It's a me world. And if you can go from me to we, that's when you really start to shift in your success, is looking out for others. Because at the end of the day, if you help others on that job that you're currently on, at some point in time, those people are going to be at different companies, different organizations. That may be the person that hires you at the next place. That may be the person that you start a company with. And so treat all people well, and treat people like people and adults like adults, and you will always be on your way.
How can we translate this if someone is now building, let's say, a small business in the digital space?
Yeah. For the person building a small digital space, this is, when I think about that, you have to, I think the biggest fear inside of that is competition. Just like you said, it's competition. Now, I think about a story of another Maxwell member that had joined the team the same time as I did. And I remember going out, and we lived in the same city. And this gentleman meets with me and says, "Hey, Chris, I wanted to meet with you." And we're talking. And I said, "Hey, anything I can do to help you out, let me know. Like, there's enough business for everybody. Just look at the downtown skyline. All we really need to feed our families well is one of those windows in all of the downtown skyline. There's enough for everybody." He says to me, "Well, Chris, I know that we know some of the same people, and at some time we're going to become competition." I said, "No, look, I'm really a collaborative person. I'm abundant thinker. We won't be competition at all." He says, No. We're going to be competition at some point." I said, "Well, great. Let me ask you a question. How long can you do this before you have to go get a job?" He says, "Well, Chris, if I can't get this up and running by January," and it was June, he says, "then I'm going to have to get a job." I said, "Well, we will never be competition." He says, "Well, how do you guarantee that?" I said, "Because I'm going to do this until it works, not until a specific date." So I didn't set a quit
Powerful.
date. I didn't set a quit date. And so you want to find, again, this is going back to that Peloton. My business excelled when I got around other people that were doing what it was that I was doing. I tried the traditional mastermind group with, the insurance agent, the financial planner, all the standard industries, and it was great, but they didn't understand what in the world I was doing, and I was a misfit. But when I got around other people, like I said, even if I was building a small marketing company, and which I did in 2009, right? I got around other marketers, because now that helped me stay up to speed on what was happening, that helped me take on clients that they couldn't help out, that helped me sharpen my skills in areas where they were good and I was better in this one, and I was able to refer business to them. So you have to have an abundant mindset that there's enough to go around with all the billions of people on the planet. You don't have to worry about competition at all. And I think that's the primary fear that holds people back from working with people in their industry.
Yeah, helping and connecting. I just yesterday the episode dropped and I recorded it on Tuesday afternoon where I was speaking about we need to start thinking collaboration rather than competition because I've been attending an event here on Curaçao, which was one of the first, not networking event, but it was a panel discussion where they were speaking about the upcoming challenges, specifically in tourism and businesses growing and coming and going. And because the island is so small and the city is too small, everyone who has studied tourism here on the island has a business and they all know each other.
Yep.
They all know each other. So now one becoming more successful than the other ultimately creates envy because it's either your neighbor or living in the next village. But you know Susie exists. And why can Susie be better than me? We both have a restaurant. Like, what's the point? The truth is what the panel discussion was about, how they addressed it, is that if we do not start supporting one another, and if we do not start doubling down on what we can do best, meaning if you have a French cuisine, do that. If you do fusion, do that. But there is also something that comes, specifically in my space, when we say personal branding. There is only one you on this planet Earth. There is only one you who can phrase or think or bring something to the table that nobody else can do that way. And if we have the ability to amplify the best in you and support somebody else, amplifying the best in them, we have even the ability to exchange or change or share clientele, if this makes sense.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah, and collaboration is really the great currency of today. You see, cooperation, and John Maxwell talks about in his book, The 17 Qualities of a Team Player. He says that cooperation is working together agreeably, like, oh, okay, yeah, Ivana's in it, I'm in it. All right, that's it, that's good. But collaboration happens when we work together aggressively. But in order to do that, we have to have pure motives. That is collaboration is the key. And then we have to say that when we collaborate, what that really does is it creates emotional stability. When we're working collaboratively together and we're working aggressively together, but if we're just working together agreeably, I mean, we just drift over time and it leaves space for that envy to come, for that competition to come, and there's enough business to go around for everyone.
I totally agree. It is just, I think, the old way of thinking. It is like 1970s if you start thinking about it. And
That's
especially in our fancy jobs, as
good.
you said, you were misunderstood by the finance guy or by the very well-known, I call it down to earth industries, and those whole everything like that is now going on digitally, as we have the opportunity to reach buyers beyond borders, and coaching and consulting and all these fancy jobs or all these fancy businesses that we are building, they're gonna be the most wanted one because fancy is cool and everybody wants to have a piece of that cake. And I think competition is a given, but it also means that there is a demand. And if there is a demand, that only means that we need to take the opportunity and seize it because we do have it today. I would like to, Chris, move on, and because you are turning high performers into high impact leadership. Leadership. Can you please elaborate shortly, what do you mean by high impact leadership and how do you do that?
High impact leadership is simply a shift from me to we. It's really about others. You see, when we look at success, that's again just about me. But when we look at significance, that's about what we can do with and through others. And so your legacy, your time on this planet is truly going to be minimized if you're only focused on yourself. So when we talk about creating high impact leaders, that's creating leaders that make a difference in numbers and numbers and numbers of people over time. And so it's a small shift that makes a big difference. But I'm telling you, if you want to go far, you're going to do it with others. If you want to go fast, you can do it by yourself, but your impact will not be as far if you do it with others.
Now, someone sitting here, because I know a lot of people who have this drive to want to wanting to make impact, coming from all walks of paths, not being necessarily privileged, rich, having big networks. And sometimes the question that appears, or most of the time, the question that appears, who am I to do this? How would you answer that?
Well, there's two things that go into that. It's one, they don't understand what leadership is. John Maxwell defines leadership as leadership is influence, nothing more, nothing less. It's not a title, it's not a position. And so when we understand that we can influence and have an impact on somebody every day, despite our title or position or financial situation, that makes a difference. So I can go out right now, I can go to the mall, and I can open up the door for somebody, have a smile, start a conversation. I can have an impact on somebody, whether it's working with the employees right around me. I can encourage them today. And we understand that leadership is not about a title or a position, it's about influence and nothing more, nothing less. We realize that leadership is inside of everybody, it's inside of everyone because we all influence someone. Now, thinking that we're not good enough, the mentality around that. Now, that is where I think we hear the phrase thrown around imposter syndrome quite a bit. And imposter syndrome is kind of a little bit like what you talked about when you were thinking about getting a mentor. Well, what will they think of me? And am I good enough yet? That's a form of imposter syndrome, but that happens only when our need to impress is greater than our need to progress. When our need to impress is greater than our need to progress, that's when that imposter syndrome comes up. Because I've never met a great mentor that was shunning someone because they just were hungry to learn. Never met one. And I've worked with some of the greatest speakers, coaches, trainers on the planet. I've never went to one and said, oh my goodness, I don't want to work with Ivana. She's just too hungry to learn. She doesn't know anything and she just wants to learn everything. I don't want to help that person, right?
No one said ever.
Nobody will say that. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Every great mentor is always looking for someone that's hungry and ready to learn and grow. And so that's what I would have to say about that, Ivana.
I think it comes also from, you know, external, looking for external validation too, because we need that. Often we want to have that assurance that we are on the right path. Sometimes we are looking from our loved ones. Like, honestly, when I told my parents that I'm dropping out of university and I'm going to make a huge investment and debt to quit my job, start an education and start a business, all I wanted is a hug and someone telling me, you know what? You got this.
Right.
They couldn't. In their, that was not in their abilities and toolkit at that time, because growing up as an, you know, in an immigrant family, it worked hard to make even possible what I had, to go to university, right, to go to school, to do all these things. And then having a stable job was their
dream.
How they define success. So me doing that, I really fell on deaf ears. And I think it can be also something that, again, where we need mentors, where we need this proximity of people, of leaders to go in these rooms and just walk into a room where you are understood.
And that's why we're, that's where the relationship. And that's where the relationships are so important, because people are held back often from, you know, the right relationships because of proximity, you know, and history. So we tend to cling around our, you know, our peers that we've grown up with, or peers that we work with. And like a pastor told me a long time ago, if you want to get around successful people that are moving the direction that you want to go, you're going to have to get on a lot of airplanes. And he was not wrong, you know. And so, you know, I'm at conferences all around the world. I'm intentionally in those environments with people that are moving in my direction, because those are my people. All right. I'm not going to get that same support and understanding from my parents or from my, you know, friends that I grew up with, because they don't get it. And so intentionally placing yourself inside of rooms with people that are moving in that direction is one of the most powerful things that you can do.
Absolutely. I mean, society is teaching us to stick to that one dear friend we grew up with. And I think you should, because I think nobody will understand us better than someone we grew up with and went through our teenage years, unless you outgrow them. And I think the moment we decide to make better mistakes tomorrow in order to be in service of humanity and making this world a better place, we will outgrow 95% people surrounding us. And I think this is the moment to get onto that plane, as Chris just said, and to reach out to people who are doing what you want to be doing. Chris, you wrote a book. I want to hear about this.
Yes. The book is From Drift to Drive. It's a high achiever's guide to break the chains of complacency. And so this book is really helping you, you know, bridge the gap between the good and your potential. You know, when you hear the word complacency, we often think of it as laziness or apathy, but it couldn't be further from the truth. Complacency is really, the Japanese use a term for it. It's called sensu, or victory disease. And that's a settling after you have a disease to think that you're okay. And if we go back to the original meaning of complacency, it's careless security. And so in this book, what I did was I redefined complacency, and I think it applies to all of us, every single one of us. And the more that I talk about complacency, the more that I research it, the more that I studied it, the more I've realized, oh my goodness, there's complacency all around me. So I redefined complacency in the book as a secret place of satisfactory success, a secret place of satisfactory success, where we've just let good be good enough and we haven't gone back to work on it the way that we did when we had to work to get to that point of good. And so if you can stomp that out of your life and recognize it, I'm telling you, life becomes a whole lot more thrilling.
Is this complacency that you speak about, is this the level of being that keeps us stagnant because we get comfortable in the success we have already achieved and feel like, oh, now I can rest. Now I can, I am that person already.
Well, it's not necessarily just a place of rest. So complacency, it looks like busyness, it feels like comfort, and it sounds like excuses. Okay. It looks like
Wow,
busyness. It feels like comfort, but it sounds like excuses. So we can be busy doing something and have complacency in all areas of our life. We can be very comfortable and complacency is right there. We could be making excuses, and it doesn't sound like excuses, but they sound like very valid reasons why we're not doing anything in that area of our life anymore. And so when we can recognize it and then begin to go through that 7-step cycle in those areas where we recognize that we're complacent, life gets exciting again.
And I just want to mention here that, friends, you're listening to this. Chris has worked with a lot of top performers from NASA to Pfizer and has made a lot of not only impact, but has taught leaders that are high performers. So if you find yourself now thinking, I'm just in the beginning of this, or I'm in the messy middle of this, I just want to mention that we are all human and we are all experiencing this on different levels.
That's
May it
correct.
be complacency, may it be fear, may it be insecurity, whatever that is. There is not someone has made it and we are done with it. I think growth and being a leader and building a business is constant growth. We probably didn't even know how much when we started. At least I didn't. I didn't ask for this, but it has become a lifestyle.
Me either. I love it. I love it.
Before we wrap up these conversations, I would love to ask you if you loved this episode. If you learned something, please let us know. If you are an Apple Podcast listener, I would love to invite you to leave us a review because only if we know that you benefit from these conversations, we will create more of it. And what I also noticed is we have so many more listeners than subscribers. Now, I am not a chaser of numbers and vanity matrices are not impressive anymore in 2025. However, more subscribers mean more global excellent leaders like Chris Robinson is. And if you want to hear more of that, hit that follow button. You will do us a huge favor and literally pave the path forward to get more of these conversations onto the show. Chris, before I let you go and before we round up this conversation, I would love to know from you, how would you like to spend your old years?
Oh my goodness, adding value to people. I don't see it ever stopping. It so fills my cup to help people grow and to help see people progress that in all of my days to the day I die, I want to add value to people. So at the end of my time, whenever that time may come, I want people to be able to say, my life was changed as a result of the words Chris spoke and the life that he lived.
Beautiful. If there is one thing you want people to take away from this conversation, what would it be?
Yeah, it would be, assess where you are right now and in the areas that may be complacent. Now, you don't have to take a major jump or do a major life change, but you can get started today. So get clear on what it is that you want, learn a little bit about it, and then go do a little bit about it. That's what I would say, Ivana. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you so much. And I would say head over to the show notes, connect with Chris, and get his new book. Thank you so much for being on the show. It has been an incredible conversation, and I'm looking forward to connect with you. If you're feeling invisible, having a hard time to break through the noise, inconsistent with creating content, not knowing what to say and how to say it, but deep down you know your message and your work can change people's lives, then listen up. I have created something so powerful for you. It's called the Magnetic Influence Accelerator, a high-touch group program that helps you build a personal brand and visibility strategy that works for you without being glued to your phone 24/7. This isn't about chasing trends or faking authority. It's about showing up clearly, consistently, so you attract clients, collaborations, podcast invites, and real opportunities that grow your business. Inside the program, you will learn how to clarify your message and story so you always know what to say, create content that feels aligned, not forced, build trust through presence and not pressure. Grow visibility beyond social media like pitching podcasts and guest posts. And you get coaching, feedback, and a supportive community, so you're never doing it alone. Head over to the show notes. The link for more information is right below.